across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
And welcome back to Up North News Radio for this Wednesday. It is October 25th. Nice to have you along across the Civic Media Radio Network. A new generation of jobs is coming to Wisconsin after this week's designation by the Biden administration that our state will be a technology hub for major investments in high-tech research and manufacturing. Our guest at the bottom of the hour, Wendy Harris, will help us understand how this will work in Wisconsin in areas like precision manufacturing, personalized medicine, biohealth technology, and much more. We'll also visit with Todd Alba. We'll get your weatherology forecast and much more. First, a reminder that if you missed our last hour and want to hear back to that or any of our past shows, you can just head over to civicmedia.us or you can listen to us as a podcast. Go to Apple, Spotify, all the usual places. Look for Up North News. To winnow it down, you may have to search for Up North News WI. Either way, you'll find us. We'd love to have you as a subscriber. Same goes with our newsletter. To subscribe to that, just head to upnorthnewswi.com and click on newsletter in the top banner. This morning, the stories that Christina Lurie put together for us include a forecast on the deer and pheasant hunting seasons in Wisconsin for this fall, a feature about booyah, not the expression, but the soup or the stew, whatever you want to call it. If you're not familiar with it, you're going to want to read up on it. And a column from me based on our conversation with State Senator Kelda Royce from earlier this week, talking about the sexism that she encountered by legislators when it came to Republican refusal to provide assistance for childcare and the extremely antiquated views that they have on women in the workforce and families who need childcare. So again, for that, look for our newsletter at upnorthnewswi.com. On the calendar for today, Sam Davison is down in our Madison Civic Media headquarters as well. And Sam, for today, we've got, it is World Pasta Day, International Artist Day, Fine Art Invitation Day, Greasy Foods Day, and Sour Foods Day. So we've got World Pasta Day, Greasy Foods, and Sour Foods
Day. Yeah, a lot of food.
If you got to go with one of them, I'd go with Pasta Day. If you're going to dedicate your day to one of these,
probably pasta. Yeah, like I like greasy food, but not because it's greasy, because it tastes good.
Yes. Yeah, right. Or brown food, as we used to call it, because it always comes all brown out of the deep fryer there. And I, again, don't have anything against it. But if you get a chance to try some kind of either a favorite pasta dish, like I have one at Mona Lisa's on Water Street in Eau Claire that I get every single time, or to try something new would be pretty cool. And in terms of sourest day, most people think of it like sour candies, but I'm sure there are plenty of other sour foods that I don't think anybody might admit are their favorite, but, you know, kind of breaks up the routine now and then. Like, what'd be a good one? Sour gummy bears would be one that you wouldn't get all the time, but it's like, sometimes you just feel like you gotta have a little hankering for that.
Sour apples, maybe. My girlfriend likes sour apples a lot.
There you go. So there you go. That's one of what's on the calendar for today. Taking a look at some of the other headlines at 7:10, Wisconsin Elections Commission Administrator Megan Wolf has responded to Senate Republicans now admitting that their vote to quote-unquote fire her was, as I had phrased it, imaginary. It was made up. And now they just refer to it, the Republicans do, as symbolic. And Megan Wolf was asked about it. She appeared on WISN-TV's Upfront program last weekend. And she said that while she is still awaiting a final court decision, that recent filing by attorneys for the legislature's top Republicans provided what she called very important clarity. She said, "It's really unfortunate that we had to sue in order for us to get these public admissions of what we knew to be true all along." So to back up a step, Megan Wolf, as administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission, she and 1,800 clerks around Wisconsin ran a safe, secure, and accurate presidential election in 2020, like they always do. Then there were the Trumpers who were going along with his lies, not suspicions, lies about quote-unquote irregularities. And some of them stick to it to this day. And they have been trying to make Megan Wolf the scapegoat to the point where Senate Republicans recklessly, irresponsibly last month had a vote to quote-unquote fire her, even though they knew, and they now admit they knew at the time, that there was no legal basis to take that kind of a vote. Attorney General Josh Call immediately filed suit to get a court to throw out the make-believe vote, and Republicans folded like a cheap suit, admitting that it was all just basically a fraud. And Megan Wolf went on to say that it's unfortunate that we at the Elections Commission are the first agency that is facing this question post the old state Supreme Court decision in the Fred Prehn case, where it really changed the way that appointments like mine are viewed. And what she's referencing there, if you're not familiar with it, is that Megan Wolf's term expired this past summer, but she's still serving in the role because of a change brought about thanks to a conspiracy that involved those same Republican senators. They conspired with a Scott Walker appointee by the name of Fred Prehn, whose term was up on the State Natural Resources Board. And they basically conspired to say, well, your term is over, but, you know, Governor Evers has nominated somebody, but if we in the Senate don't get around to confirming that nomination, you don't have to step down. Now, that makes no sense. But then the state Supreme Court, which was controlled by conservatives at the time, also said, yeah, we don't see any problem with that, which again, makes no sense. But Fred Prehn was able to basically be a squatter in that job for, you know, more than a year afterwards before he finally relented after Tony Evers won re-election. But the precedent had been set that somebody can stay in their job until there's a nominee to be approved. Well, there was no nominee to be approved to replace Megan Wolf. The State Elections Commission never forwarded another nomination. So there was no reason for Megan Wolf to step down because of this Fred Prehn situation that Republicans created themselves. But apparently the rule only applied to them when they were conspiring to keep somebody in their job. But as soon as somebody they didn't like was going to use that same function, well, then they were going to pretend it never happened and they were going to pretend to fire her. And thankfully, that did not happen. She did not step down voluntarily. The Attorney General, Josh Call, immediately got a court involved, and the Republicans admitted that it was all made up. And so Megan Wolf gets to stay in that role. But the fact of the matter is, you know, state Supreme Court control has now switched to progressives. And at some point, somebody's going to force the issue of whether this is the way it's always going to be now, or do you fix this so that when your term is up, your term is up? And do you fix it so that senators have to confirm nominees in a timely manner and not sit on them the way that they are still sitting on more than 100 nominations from Governor Evers? Why are they sitting on them? Because they can. Because it enables them to, at some point, hold the vote, vote to reject the nomination, and effectively fire those nominees, those appointees. Just like they did last week with 8 of Governor Evers' nominees and appointees who were doing their job and doing everything that was asked of them, but Republicans were just able to fire them because they could. It was a horrible abuse of the process, and this whole episode underscores the need to fix it. It doesn't look like Republicans are going to fix it anytime soon, but it sure needs to be fixed. 7 o'clock temperatures around the Civic Media Radio Network of communities include 52 degrees up here on Lake Wissota, 59 in Madison. Waukesha's at 57 degrees now at 7:15. La Crosse, 60. Wausau, 58. Wisconsin Rapids is at 58 degrees as well. Green Bay, 60. And in Hayward right now, it is 48 degrees as we welcome in Jennifer Fuchitsky from Weatherology to tell us a bit more about a forecast that's been wetter and milder, but is going to be colder before too much longer. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, you hit it on the nose. That's exactly what we can expect to see here this week. It looks like a chance for some rain and some thunderstorms for the early morning hours for most today. Just cloudy around Amory and Baldwin. Then we'll get a little bit of a break before rain returns here for the evening hours. Highs in the mid to upper 60s from Wisconsin Rapids southward. Upper 50s around 60 from Wausau over towards west central Wisconsin. Chance for showers and storms Thursday for all. Highs in the 60s for everyone tomorrow. Friday, another chance for rain for everyone. Really starting to cool off for some as a cold front comes in. Temperatures climb early Friday morning, then slowly fall throughout the day as that system comes in during the daytime hours around Baldwin to Amory and from Madison over towards Milwaukee. Mid to upper 60s from Richland Center up towards Wisconsin Rapids. Low 60s around Oshkosh and Wausau. Then for the weekend, looks really, really looking to cool down for all, getting below average. Cloudy skies across the board on Saturday. Highs in the mid to upper 40s from Oshkosh, Madison to Milwaukee. A little warmer for southwestern Wisconsin, getting into the low 50s. Around 40 for central Wisconsin and mid-30s expected around Amory and Baldwin. Then to round out the weekend on Sunday, a chance for some rain from Wisconsin Rapids southward, mid-40s to around 40 degrees for those areas. Chance for rain and snow mix around Wausau with highs in the upper 30s, and then a chance for some snow for west central Wisconsin with highs again in the mid-30s.
Which is another reminder why we try to do Halloween costumes that don't involve a winter jacket. I don't know. I think every Halloween costume basically starts with a winter jacket and you hope that you can shed it, but it doesn't look like that's going to be the case this year, Jennifer. Thank you so much. Hope you have a great day.
Thanks so much. You too.
All right. Again, we get your weatherology forecast from Jennifer every day about this time and weatherology forecasts all around the clock as you listen to shows here on the Civic Media Radio Network. A quick note on sports before we take a break here, just because, again, I am, and many baseball fans are, flabbergasted might be the right word, to find out that the World Series is going to be Texas versus Arizona. Both of them wild card teams, and neither one of them even got the first wild card slot. The Arizona Diamondbacks snuck into the last wild card spot and then defeated the Brewers and then the Dodgers and now the Phillies, beating them in games 6 and 7 in Philadelphia, winning 4-2 last night. And they will head to Arlington, Texas later this week to start the World Series against the Texas Rangers, which had been a 5 seed in the American League playoffs. But that's the way the ball bounces with this new postseason lineup. And so it'll be Texas and Arizona in the World Series later this week. But back with more in just 60 seconds, wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this Wednesday morning. When you're here, you're up north. We'll be right back. And it's Katy Perry's birthday today. And of course, I don't have that note in front of me now. So pop quiz, Sam, what did I say? Was Katy Perry 39 today?
Yes.
Yes, I did. 39 years old today. So happy birthday to Katy Perry for that. One note on the baseball playoffs before I let them go. And by the way, I don't even know who does have the World Series on TV later this week. But what I wanted to say was how nice it is to hear Brian Anderson doing the play-by-play for TBS. And I know he's been doing baseball on TBS for some time now, but I almost never catch the national games on TBS. So he doesn't do nearly as many Milwaukee Brewers games as he used to. But I feel like we're really lucky to have, you've got Brian Anderson calling the baseball games. You've got Wayne Larrabee calling the Packer games. You've got Matt LaPay with the Badger games. We just have some really good sports play-by-play announcers, which is not easy. Sam, yeah. Have you had to try it at all for radio or as PA?
I've always been too scared to try. It's a skill I probably should learn, but I've not really tried it, no.
I tried it, I think, like one time and for a basketball game. And I just said, no way, no, can't. And God bless anybody that can do it. Fox actually has it this time. So we're done hearing Brian Anderson on there for the year. Another story that I wanted to share with Sam, we teased it, I want to say last Friday, about a couple of brothers in Wisconsin were going to try to set the record for the world's largest grilled cheese sandwich.
Mm, and I think I saw something about this.
Yeah, and Roger's reminding us as well that Fox will carry the World Series. Yes, thank you. And he also tells us that Helen Reddy's You and Me Against the World is one of his Helen Reddy songs. We mentioned the anniversary of her birth a little bit later on, but getting a little bit earlier. But getting back to these two guys in Walworth County, brothers, they did, how old are, these guys are 11 and 10 years old. And
really?
They set a new record for grilled cheese. The world's largest grilled cheese sandwich in Milwaukee. It happened at the Tripoli Shrine Center on Saturday, according to WISN-TV. The sandwich was just about 11 feet long, a little over 6 feet wide, nearly 3 inches thick. They used more than 300 pounds of dough and 60 pounds of cheese for, and this was definitely a family project. I mean, nothing against a 10-year-old and 11-year-old, but family and friends helped with a custom welded pan, and then the event benefited money for local food banks. It says here that Exodus and Iggy Chaudhry have their own YouTube channel with 150,000 subscribers. Sam, I love what I'm doing here. I don't think we have 150,000 subscribers, but a 10-year-old and 11-year-old do. So
yeah,
clearly,
doing something right, I guess.
We need to be doing something different, and we can no longer pick the grilled cheese sandwich because somebody's already picked that route. But
unless we make an even bigger one.
I mean, yeah, but then you're showing up a 10 and 11-year-old kid.
Poor taste.
Yeah, I'm not sure that that's the way that we want to go necessarily. So try to come up with, look at this, I'm giving Sam an assignment. Can you come up with a world record that we would break?
A world record to break? I can do that.
Yeah, well, right after you come up with the, what else is on our list? We're going to come up with our own holiday. We're going to get on one of those national holiday calendars because there seems to be a holiday for everything, like Sour Candy Day. So somewhere at this point, we're going to make our mark, ladies and gentlemen, on the show, either through a YouTube channel or a world record or something else equally ridiculous that we're going to be talking about. We are looking forward to talking about in our second half hour this new technology hub designation that is coming to Wisconsin and the things that it's going to be able to do. The designation is going to allow Wisconsin to compete for up to $75 million in funding so that various participants can get access to capital and scale up their operations to a national, if not a global level, grow the supply chain, increase lab space. There's going to be expanded opportunities for worker housing and for transportation to support the projects. And we're going to be talking a bit in our second half hour about how Wisconsin's going to make its mark in this. Because right now it sounds very generic, very 30,000 foot level. When you talk about high-tech jobs and high-tech manufacturing jobs, well, what exactly is that going to involve? And when Wendy Harris gets here, we're going to talk about the bioscience, biohealth aspect of it. So many things have changed in technology over time. Think about how just a few days ago, we marked the anniversary of the iPod. And remember how revolutionary that was, that nobody could have predicted. People thought that, CDs were here to stay. Now nobody buys compact discs anymore. And the same goes for our healthcare. So we're going to be talking a bit more about that with our guest coming up in just a few moments here. I also wanted to mention that something that Senator Tammy Baldwin has been working on for many, many years has finally come to fruition and is going to do something that helps make sure that hedge funds, so-called vulture capitalists, can't get away with some of the things that they got away with. And specifically, we're talking about the paper mill in Brokaw up in Marathon County that closed way back in 2012. But it's an issue that's been around ever since. Because that mill for Wausau Paper had been operating for more than a century. And then one of these hedge funds comes in and starts buying shares in Wausau Paper, and they were able to ultimately exert control on the board of directors. And they insisted on these drastic cuts so that they could maximize shareholder price rather than taking care of the company itself. And it led to the Brokaw Mill closing after more than 100 years of operation, 450 people out of work. Brokaw doesn't even exist anymore. You know, it lost half its tax base. When the paper mill shut down, the village had to be dissolved and incorporated into a neighboring village. So Tammy Baldwin got to work and sought some new transparency standards in the way that these hedge funds are able to secretly accumulate stock in a company. And they do it through something called a wolf pack approach, where multiple hedge funds will coordinate their stock purchases as a single group, but they buy the shares individually so as not to trigger some of this, the disclosures that are required. And again, it's just the kind of thing that you, when you first had your markets and hedge funds, you know, you didn't foresee that people were going to be that low down and dirty, but that's where we are. Under the old rules, hedge funds were able to withhold information about their stock purchases for 10 days. Once they reached a 5% stake in the company, the new rule cuts that window to 5 days so that other shareholders aren't left in the dark by potentially predatory behavior. And Tammy Baldwin tried to get it passed as a bill for years. There were enough pro-Wall Street Republicans that were blocking her, so finally she started blocking nominations to the Securities and Exchange Commission until the SEC provided assurances that they would consider the rule on their own without the need for a bill to pass. And now that rule has passed by the SEC. They have made it official. And so it is that much tougher for vulture capitalists to come in and do to other hometowns what they did to Brokaw back in the day. We'll take a break here. We will have a guest on next to talk all about the new technology hub designation for the state of Wisconsin and a new generation of jobs that's coming up next. I had to go way back on this one to make the point that technology is not necessarily something to fear. Look, there are still concerns out there about, you know, AI, and rightfully so. Technology is can go very quickly, but there's also so many ways that it is its power is harvested and put in positive, proactive directions. And we are going to really see that in Wisconsin over the next several years as the state wins designation from the Biden administration as a technology hub for what's going to be some serious investment in new jobs for high-tech research and manufacturing. You'll see it in healthcare. You'll see it in improving the supply chain. And so with that designation, and again, not everybody got one of these. There were hundreds of applications, and a consortium in Wisconsin was one of the winners this week. And so we wanted to talk to Wendy Harris. She's a former GE healthcare executive who helped prepare the Tech Hub application. She is now the regional innovation officer for the Wisconsin Biotech, the Wisconsin BioHealth Tech Hub. And she's going to help lead Wisconsin into forming a mature hub for personalized medicine. And Wendy Harris joins us now. Wendy, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Pat.
It's so nice to have you here to tell us more about the BioHealth Tech Hub. But let's take a step back and talk about the Tech Hub overall, that when you're talking to folks over, you know, family dinners or the grocery store, and they go, what is this Tech Hub thing? How do you best describe the Technology Hub program from a national standpoint? What exactly is it in general? And then we'll bring it down to the Wisconsin and the BioHealth level.
Yeah, great. Yeah, so it's a great opportunity for different industries to come together and collaborate within their industry. So back in earlier this year, May of this year, the EDA issued this opportunity for different regions to apply for this Tech Hub funding. And the submission deadline was August 15th of this year. So each of the specific regions or industries could come together and submit an application for funding for their specific tech hub. So there's money available here anywhere from $50 to $75 million, depending on how many tech hubs are selected. And Wisconsin, we decided to submit for the biohealth tech hub. We have a great number of companies here in the state of Wisconsin focused in the biohealth industry. And so we put in our application in August, and we found out on Monday that we were one of just 31 regions selected as the for that designation. And I think, as you mentioned, not all of the tech hubs, there's only five that were specifically around biohealth and biotech. There's other opportunities around clean energy and autonomous systems and quantum imaging, things like that, or quantum computing. So, you know, these tech hubs are all different. Ours is specifically around biohealth. And as I said, we've decided on that because we have a great opportunity to advance personalized medicine in the state of Wisconsin.
So, so I was looking at how this was described elsewhere. The Milwaukee Business Journal said that the application focused on precision medicine and commercialization in the biohealth industry. This includes bioscience, healthcare and imaging, diagnostics, and digital healthcare. And so we're talking about not just things like diagnostics or treatment, but risk assessment, prevention detection. There are new ways that you can look at devices, tests, medicines, and so on. So I'd asked you earlier, how can we describe this in some kind of a tangible function, something you can actually put your hands on and say, this is an example of something that can make a difference in bioscience or biohealth? And you mentioned, you know, one particular type of cancer screening, for example.
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, there's lots of different applications. And so, you know, we'll be working on putting that together, specific programs that will be applying for the funds around personalized medicine. But to make it kind of simple, I mean, one area is that we've actually moved from kind of precision medicine, which is being able to treat a group of patients in a certain way, to personalized medicine. And the technology has made that possible today through the genetic screening on the front end, testing, and then all the way through to understanding that person's past and societal factors, all the way through to drugs and pharmaceuticals, and then through to diagnostics and treatment. And one of the kind of buzzwords now in the industry is theranostics, which combines both diagnostics and therapy. So therapy, diagnostics, theranostics. And it allows us to, based on that person's specific genetics, not only be able to see the disease, and in an example would be cancer, but also treat it at the same time. So that is obviously much better for the patient, fewer side effects, lower cost. And so that's an area that really brings personalized medicine to the forefront. And that's one area that we'll be advancing through this biohealth tech hub.
It's amazing to see how far we're going to be coming from, you know, one size fits all treatment when it comes to helping people with their various, you know, healthcare issues and needs. So for a layperson hearing this and saying, what's in this for me? While this all sounds rather, you know, high level in terms of the research and the eventual implementation, all of that research, eventual manufacturing, distribution, all of that is going to need to be supported. So can you talk a bit about how this these technology hubs aren't just creating, again, very high level jobs, but all of the ancillary benefits that are going to come to an economy like Wisconsin's?
Yeah, thanks, Pat. So, you know, the biohealth industry in general in the state of Wisconsin is growing at 10% annually. So it's a great growth industry within our state of higher paying jobs. In the past year, we've employed 129,000 individuals that are in the biohealth industry, producing about $32 billion for the state. And again, with that growth rate, we expect that to continue. We do have trying to get more people into the biohealth industry, the workforce, and grow that workforce, upskilling that workforce. So I think, a lot of opportunities going forward. You know, as a part of this, there's companies that, as I mentioned, we have a number of great companies in this state that happen to be located here, headquartered here, kind of grew up in the great state of Wisconsin. And those companies, I'll use GE Healthcare as an example because it's what I know best, but GE manufactures products in Madison, Waukesha, and Milwaukee, but they actually utilize over 500 suppliers within the state of Wisconsin as part of their supply chain to manufacture those products. So, you know, it really is a Wisconsin statewide effort to make sure that we have that local supply chain and that we can produce those products right here in the state of Wisconsin.
That's fascinating that you mentioned the supply chain and all of the very many local suppliers and other things that are mentioned with the tech hub include, you know, increasing lab space. There may be expanded opportunities for worker housing or transportation to support some of these projects across the country. There's going to be, in, you know, improving the access to capital. So, I mean, this really does create large ripples in all of the economies where these tech hubs are located. The tech hubs themselves are part of something called the CHIPS and Science Act. And a lot of folks, if you ask them, you know, what has happened over the Biden administration years, they'll point to, you know, the bipartisan infrastructure law or the American Rescue Plan or the Inflation Reduction Act. And people might not be as familiar with the CHIPS and Science Act, but can you talk a bit generally about its focus on renewing American manufacturing in the tech sectors? I mean, we so often think that tech jobs are just in, you know, Asia or Europe or just on the coasts. And to what degree are there these opportunities to improve tech jobs and supply chains in middle America?
Yeah, no, that's a great point, Pat. And I think, you know, part of the criteria that we where we submitted this grant was really the impact on our national security and bringing the supply chain back to the states. So when we talk about this tech hub, that was part of the criteria that you had to have a plan to have a supply chain locally. And not only is that from a, you know, national security perspective, but we've learned, you know, that companies with localized supply chains and can collaborate, they can move faster, they can adapt their products quickly. So that is part of the strategy. So part of the criteria and one of the reasons that Wisconsin was selected is not only engaging that local supply chain, but I do also want to mention that, you know, because of our education system, not only our university system, which is, you know, really well established across the state, but also our technical colleges were really helpful in terms of, you know, being part of this tech hub and making sure that we can grow our kind of our STEM initiatives and educate our workforce to, you know, embrace this new industry.
A new industry that's coming about by way of so many partnerships. We've got private sector companies that are involved in this, but there's also, like you said, colleges, universities, tech colleges, labor unions, tribal communities, nonprofit organizations, and this is going to result from advances in math and physics and chemistry, biology, engineering, manufacturing, distribution. There really is something for all different levels of partnerships that can benefit the state. It's just hard to even know, you know, where things are going to grow first and foremost over the years. And yet somehow you're the one that's going to be, what, trying to tame that tiger, if you will.
Yeah, that made my job sound really hard here, Pat. But, no, I think the other thing that Wisconsin brings, you mentioned the coast, and this is one thing that, you know, as part of the CHIPS and Science Act, really you'll notice that of the 31 tech hubs that were selected, a lot of them are from the Midwest. And, you know, one of the reasons Wisconsin is so strong in our application is because we have that kind of solid manufacturing base to build on. And, you know, kind of deep manufacturing ability in the state of Wisconsin. And so, you know, we've actually seen biohealth companies move from the coast back to Wisconsin, not only because we have that, you know, ability to attract talent back to the state of Wisconsin, but also our ability to manufacture products right here. So you can research, develop those products, commercialize them. You mentioned lab space, shared lab space, and then move it all the way to manufacturing in the state. And that's something that the coasts don't really have to the extent that we do here in Wisconsin.
It's true. If folks are not directly involved in manufacturing right now, they may still think of, and there is still plenty of, you know, traditional old school manufacturing, that we don't have auto parts plants here or auto plants here anymore. But what you have now is this precision manufacturing and automation. And I think some folks would be surprised the degree to which we have that here in this state, almost more than many, many other states. And so not only do we have the research here, but we have that manufacturing capability that, you know, when all is said and done, Wendy, when we look back, I don't even know if 10 years, maybe if we look ahead, you know, 20 years, looking back at this, what do you think we'll be able to say Wisconsin turned its technology hub into? Is it something that saves lives, saves the economy? What's the legacy going to be if done right?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I hope all of that, right? Saving lives, making really this personalized medicine effort, really growing it here in Wisconsin. And, you know, I think sometimes the biohealth industry is kind of a quiet industry a little bit, like, you know, the auto industry, it's big, you see it forward. We're making smaller piece parts. We're sometimes a little bit quieter than some of the other industries. And that's something that we really want to bring to the forefront and make Wisconsin a destination for biohealth companies to come and grow. And, you know, that kind of brings, kind of lifts everyone's, industry up. But certainly the biohealth industry is, like I said, it's higher starting wages. It's a clean environment. And we really have great companies already based here to build on.
It's going to be a great thing. Wendy Harris, Regional Innovation Officer for the Wisconsin BioHealth Tech Hub. Thank you, Wendy, very much. Have a great day.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you.
Back with Todd. All right, back now at 10 minutes to 8 o'clock on this Wednesday, October 25th, where normally we'd be, Todd Albo would be racing into the Civic Media Studios right about now. He'd be complaining about rush hour traffic. I'd be telling him that, you know, he could just leave a little bit earlier. He knows that traffic's going to be bad, you know, in Madison. And, you know, but we couldn't even get that out of him today because he's sitting at home. So, you know, he can't even blame traffic this time. Right, Todd? If you're really there, I can't see.
Are you there, Pat?
Yeah, I'm here. I can hear you.
Oh my God.
I think we're going to be talking about Spectrum. I cannot wait till we get the update from Todd on what's happening there. It could also be, though, my theory is that Todd is accidentally sleeping in because, you know, he's got that new earlier shift. He moved from 1 o'clock to noon, and that might have thrown his body clock off. And maybe that's it. And that's why the lights are off at Todd's place right now. Maybe that's the answer. I'm doing what I can, Todd, to save.
Well,
save
you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you just fine.
Yeah, I know. Can you hear or not?
I can hear you. Can't see you at all.
All right. Well, thank you. I actually did shower. I did shower, and I thought, well, this is fantastic. I'll be all ready, and I'll do this. I have this new computer; it'll be fine. But can you enter in like another? So I have my laptop up. Let's see if this works.
Oh, here so you are. You're knocking on the door again. Well. I'll wait for that one to hook up so we don't get a feedback issue. And oh boy,
that's there.
Now I can see him on this one.
All right, close that one out.
Oh my
goodness. All right, close that one out.
Look at this.
All right, is that better?
Yes, Todd, I think it is. But now I can't. Let me unmute you here and see if that works. You're doing this through your speakers, aren't you? We got to get you a pair of headphones. I'm hearing you fine.
Your speakers, aren't you?
Listen to how. Headphones.
Well, I've got the earbuds in, but my God, I almost swore the air.
Yeah, you almost did.
My earbuds won't connect to my laptop.
You almost did.
This
It's a crap show.
I'm going to mute.
It's an absolute crap show, Pat.
I'm going to mute that microphone.
I'm going to.
Oh, look at that. I can't even mute it. There we go. Ah, oh, Todd, what are we going to do with you in technology? Now I can't hear you through that. I can't hear you through your desktop computer now. Todd, you know, there's a phone number we could maybe have you call in. Let's try that. No, I'm teasing. As soon as I can get Todd's other computer unmuted, look at this. Well, let me tell you who's coming up next here on the Civic Media Radio Network while we wait for Todd to come join us.
Civic Media Radio Network while we wait for
Todd to poor Todd's computer. I feel bad for him. Oh, gosh. There we go. Coming up next is Earl Ingram. He'll be along at 8 o'clock on many of these Civic Media stations, except in the Wausau area, where you're going to be hearing Chad Holmes next on Bull Falls Radio, Stephanie Miller in the Madison area, and then James and the gang in Wisconsin Rapids. And they are all followed by As Goes Wisconsin. And then that guy that I'm watching wander around his place, Todd Alba, is looking for the right connection there. He'll be on from noon to 2, allegedly. And then Matt Flynn will be on from 2 to 4, Devil's Advocates from 4 to 6, and Maggie Dawn from 6 to 7. Sam, I know you're still with me there.
I
think that, remember for a couple of days now, I expressed hesitation about, you know, this new clock that started today, mm-hmm. that, you know, would I be able to hit the commercial breaks at the right time? Would I fill the expanded first segment? And that all seemed to have worked out just fine. And
yeah, it turned out to be
Todd and technology that was our Achilles heel. We were this close. We were this close to making it all the way through. But
there's got to be some hiccup. It can't go perfect.
Look, again, it could have gone all manner of sideways here. So we'll see if Todd sits back down in front of his computer at some point. If he does, then I will pop him back in. But let me tie up a bow on what we were doing in our last segment here, and talking about the tech hub designation that we're going to be getting here in Wisconsin. Specifically, and this is what I was going to talk to Todd about here, is this is going to require a whole new generation of students learning new things through math, physics, chemistry, biology, engineering, manufacturing. That's if the Republican Party doesn't kill off the University of Wisconsin system and the Wisconsin Technical College system. And as Todd would tell us, with the formerly known as two-year centers starting to close or be continually, endangered, nobody wants to be doom and gloom about this, but we do want to be realistic that Wisconsin's public schools and Wisconsin's UW system and Wisconsin's technical college system are the crown jewels of this economy. And yeah, everybody else can say, you can say a lot of things, say, well, what about our manufacturing employees? And what about our farmers? And yeah, those are good too. But if you don't have those three things, then it becomes really tough to grow the jobs of the future. And we have a very real brain drain in Wisconsin. And people get offended by that. They say, oh, you're saying the people here aren't smart. No, I am saying we are losing many, not all, but we're losing many of our best and brightest who have seen the hostility toward public schools. They have seen the hostility toward the UW system. They've just seen the hostility toward, facts and science when it comes to things like a changing climate. They have seen the lack of action on gun safety and school safety, and they have decided to go elsewhere. And so getting this technology hub is, in fact, a big deal. But it only becomes a winning deal if it's our own kids, if it's our own best and brightest, who then become the young adults who do the research or work in construction to build these new labs, who work in distribution, who are operating the precision manufacturing that will get this all done for us. That's what we need. And we're not going to get that under the current political environment. And that's the That's the thing that makes this a big opportunity, but one that we just can't afford to screw up by leaving some of the same people in charge of our state. Tomorrow, Joe Zepecki joins us, as well as Kristen Lyerly, giving us our weekly Hometown Health segment. Remember, you can follow us all day long. Look for Pat Kreitlow Up North on Facebook, or Pat Kreitlow. You can also look for Up North News WI on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Would be nice to have you along. And again, you can keep listening through the Civic Media app. All right, glad you could be with us up here on the lake today. Have a great Wednesday. We'll see you for a perfect show tomorrow. Have a great day.